Hey, Hello, beautiful, people.
Indeed, that is one of my biggest pleasure is always when I went to my own
So
farm.
I think it is important to first understand what a healthy relationship with food is for us to know what it is not.
Not try.
I can relate. I can relate.
Selfish.
So you could be your own farmer pretty soon. Who knows?
Trust me when I tell you, there will always be challenges. There will always be risks.
Seems like we have a lot in common.
Welcome to the Let's Talk Agriculture podcast show.
And of course, it's your favorite girl, Sharonita Hosa.
Hello, beautiful people. Welcome to the Let's Talk Agriculture podcast show. Today, I bring an exciting and interesting episode where you're going to learn how to increase your income as a small-scale farmer. It is true that smallholder farmers are major contributors to the agricultural sector, and you would expect that they have a secure livelihood, but that isn't the case. Our smallholder farmers are still being stereotyped as poor people, but we do not want to hear or see that anymore. I mean, why would we want to hear that, really? I mean, considering that women are actively involved in the agricultural sector, so we have to see how to change that narrative. So join me as we welcome our guest for today, who will be taking you down the right path. Hello, Adiza. Thank you very much for joining the show today. How are you doing?
Thank you, Sharon. Good day. I'm fine.
Oh, that's good to know. So I heard about your amazing trip to our favorite place in the world. So I was thinking maybe you'd like to share a little bit of your experience so we can get a feel of how it is. I mean, for many of us that haven't been there, I mean, we've heard so much about this place and how well they work around the agriculture sector. So we want to hear a little bit, I mean, learn from your experience just briefly. We'd really appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Sharon, for having me on board on this discussion, basically to see how to improve the smallholder farmers' livelihood. I'm sure the discussion will be channeled towards reasoning what are the way forwards in order to help the smallholder farmers out there. Talking about what you said earlier on, lessons learned from, let's look at Israel. There are different model the smallholder farmers have been able to adopt, and that has really helped. But then I think that has to do a little bit more of their background and the way people live, and then considering Israel being a country where citizens were actually scattered, and then they have to start like putting their lives together. So for smallholder farmers basically in Israel, there are two models that Israel use. One is the kibbutz. And kibbutz lives like in a community where they share common things together, they work together, they earn together, and then everybody is seen as being equal. And the other one has to do with the mashavs. And the mashavs is a little bit digression from the kibbutz because they still live together in communities, having common problems, common solutions, but then these are people or farmers that have their small holdings not completely together like in the kibbutz model. But of course, we don't have this back home, but I think there are always lessons to learn, or there are rooms for modification or improvement, because there is no perfect model out there for people to follow. You just have to like seek what really works for you and you make to do with it. So that's a bit about what I can say with the lessons learned in Israel.
Thank you very much for sharing that. I mean, I really wasn't expecting you to go and relate it to smallholder farmers, but it really came out really nice. I appreciate you sharing your experience with us. But then again, I'm wondering, what can you really highlight as the major constraint smallholder farmers face when it comes to earning and boosting up their livelihood? Maybe let's use Nigeria as a case study to see what are the challenges that smallholder farmers face at this point.
Okay, I can say there is a lot of challenges. The challenges are numerous, and once we're talking in terms of how we can drive and support smallholder farmers back here in Nigeria, is a long topic where you keep on deliberating, because there are loopholes from the side of the smallholder farmers. Even if we have all the enabling policies around to help, but I think looking at projects in times past where some have succeeded and majority of them, of course, have failed. Because if you look at policies like the Green Revolution, if you look at policies like the Anchor Borrowers project we're having, these are good initiatives from the government just to see that the smallholder farmers out there are able to improve their livelihood. But I can tell you it has its loopholes from the side of implementation as well as the smallholder farmers. But I think one key thing is it's very important that for whatever project that is to be implemented to the smallholder farmers to improve their livelihoods, it's always best to do it bottom up, because if you go to community A, it's quite different from the challenges that community B will be facing. But sometimes, again, when implementing this policy, it looks like a one-size-fits-all. But I want to believe it shouldn't be the case. It should be specific and it should be tailor-made to address the needs of those particular communities or state or regions we're talking about. There are a lot of challenges the smallholder farmers are facing out there. It ranges from lack of infrastructure to access to credits, sometimes as simple as insurance that might just be a little bit sacrifice, I would say, to let go of some little amounts in order to like safeguard big failures. The farmers, one, do not even have the education to know the importance of having that insurance is in place, not to talk about even assessing some of these facilities in their daily farms. Then there's also uncertainty about water supply, right? If we want to ensure food security, I want to believe all humans eat all seasons. We don't have wet season, we don't have dry season. It's always we're eating once, twice, three times in a year. And I'm happy we spoke about Israel, which is one of the most advanced agricultural countries in the world. If you go to Israel, there is no wet season, there's no dry season. And let's not forget, there is a limited source of water for Israel, where you discover there are areas that just have about 200 millimeters of rainfall in a year. That can actually not be sufficient to grow any kind of crop. But you see, they have to think outside the box. And today, if we're talking in terms of drip irrigations or advanced irrigation methods, they were all emanating or they were all coming out of Israel. So it means for us to be food secured, we have to look at ways to produce even in the off season, because for human beings, we don't have off seasons where we eat and off seasons, maybe main seasons where we don't eat. So the water I'm talking about is really critical. And of course, very important. There are different models you see people implementing probably in communities where you see community savings in order to like boost one another. That is where you don't have maybe access to loan from commercial banks or some agricultural banks. I think there are models, there are ways where people can do some kind of self-help groups within their communities in order to help them. So we can go on and on talking about problems and challenges of farmers endless, because if you look at one community, the challenge might be quite different from another community. But if we look at the key things I spoke about, they are really, really important. Infrastructure, credits, insurance, water, because why I mentioned water is without water, you can't grow a thing. So water is really, really critical. And then, of course, when we say water, there are what we refer to as the agricultural water, meaning it's meeting all the criteria that is good, of good quality to like water plants, not just picking contaminated water to water plants, because at the end of the day, it still returns back to the people, where if you have contaminated water, even the plants you're growing are contaminated at the end of the day.
Thank you very much for sharing that. So I do agree with you on providing the tailored made solutions. I mean, I'm very, very keen on this. I mean, if we're trying to put out solutions that can benefit farmers and even those that are developing new technologies, it is very important that we actually seek ways to speak directly with the farmers. I mean, try to understand what exactly they are going through, what exactly are their challenges, so that you can make tailored solutions that would actually solve their problems. So sometimes I talk about a lot of tech companies that are putting out solutions for farmers, for their soil, for this and that. And I'm always asking the question, is this really what the farmers need. They say they have done so many things for the smallholder farmers to help them progress and all of that, but the question still remains, is this the solution that these farmers are looking out for? Will this actually solve the problem? Did you ask them, did you do your groundwork and say this is what they actually need? And that is really something that I believe should be addressed. I don't know what your thoughts are, but I mean, that is really something I believe we should really look into. I mean, take for instance now, so LifeX Agriculture, which is actually my nonprofit, so we're trying to see how to develop courses for youth and also for women. Though we already know the challenges that youth face, we already know the challenges that women face. I mean, from my own angle, I know that women need access to finance. So we're trying to see how to develop courses that will be tailored to them. But guess what? We decided to get feedback from them. And by that, we are putting out, we've put out, not really we are, we've put out questionnaires to get their feedback. And we are seeing, results from it. We're hearing them saying these are the things that they want, these are the things that they need to actually grow as youth and as women in agriculture. And I think that is really the direction many people should look out for. I mean, if we really want to solve some of the challenges your smallholder farmers face, am I right or wrong here?
Yeah, you are right, Sharon. Like while I started discussing, I spoke of most of those challenges the farmers have, or the smallholder farmers, which includes both women and youths out there, as input to what they will be needing. Because I spoke about infrastructures, I spoke about credit loans, I spoke about insurance, I spoke about the water, including inputs that they will be using for some of those farms. But on the other flip side, if we're looking at, okay, where will some of this intervention come? Because aside having some of these challenges addressed, there are the bigger ones, which is on the other flip side of the coin. For example, markets. Market is really critical, right? And the next one has to do with information. Farmers need information. And when I say information, it encompasses information from production to the selling point, as simple as knowing information about the weather forecast, knowing if there will be an outbreak of pests or diseases. In advanced countries, you have all those information ready. You also have market information as to prices. And once the farmers are informed of some of these trends in the market over time, then they are able to safeguard to like downscale probably their production, because they know there will be some kind of glut in the market, and you try to avoid overproduction because you might not be able to have good return on your investment. That is really critical. So information can go on and on, as simple as having information to where to sell at the end of the day is also important to the farmers. Like we'll always advise, sell before you cultivate, meaning you already have standby buyers. Sometimes people go even into contractual agreement where they're able to like pen down to know what they are producing, who is absorbing, because once you produce more than the market can absorb, then you should be sure that glut will set in. And when glut sets in, prices will drop and farmers will begin to make what? Lose their money at the end of the day. So these are the kind of information I'm talking about. And then knowing the market, knowing where to sell. It's unfortunate that most farmers will, first of all, cultivate the land, get the produce, and it's the day they are harvesting. They will think, okay, where do I need to sell? And when you deal with perishables like vegetables, I think that wouldn't go well, because if you're not careful, you lose the whole of the yield, or at the end of the day, part of the yield is gone to waste. And we keep on hearing topics about food waste and how to like curtail some of this food waste. And if you're not careful, as a farmer, you're part of the people or part of the system where you now encourage food waste, because your produce cannot get into the market, and then it goes down the drain at the end of the day. So markets and information on the other side of all the input or all the activities the farmers do, I think it's also a big challenge, because most people are stuck with their produce. And sometimes it's not like the produce in itself is in excess, but the information is the bridge between who is producing and who is consuming. So maybe there's a farmer somewhere in Kano who has produced his tomato, and he's there stuck in Kano saying, I can't sell my tomato. And there is somebody somewhere in the south, probably in Ibadan, that's like looking for tomatoes to sell. So some of these issues need to be addressed holistically. To have, I will always insist, you need to have all the actors connected together. If not, information at the end of the day will be that singular thing that will make your business to go into ruin.
Very, 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 very insightful, really. I mean, agriculture is really teamwork, and we should really see how to contribute greatly. Well, I will share with you very soon what I'm working on, because I feel that a lot of agriculture businesses, they don't really come together to do some things. We're always looking at how to put our hands outside of our what should I call it? Let me just say Nigeria. So I'm really working on something for that, to see how we can always look within. We could always try to do something, collaborate in-house before we start throwing our hands outside, looking out for other things where we could actually grow and work within. So I have a project for that, but I will discuss that with you probably outside of this podcast.
But, okay, that's
yeah. So in January, I made a presentation at the Global Sustainable Business Summit. And I mentioned, because I was talking about how we could drive a sustainable food system, and I mentioned supporting the livelihood and well-being of farmers and those working in the food system as one of the ways we can drive a global and sustainable food system. Somehow, I kind of feel like there's still a gap, and we are yet to see the livelihood of farmers being improved. But my question here actually is, how can we drive the support? How can we drive and support the livelihood of our farmers? I mean, what are your thoughts on this? How can we actually drive the livelihood of farmers? What role do we play, and who are these people that should be playing that role?
Okay. A good food for thought. I think, like I mentioned earlier, it's the responsibility of everybody, all the actors that are driving the food system, including the farmers themselves. If they don't realize or see the need that there are a lot of issues within production itself, because that is where the farmer occupies in the value chain, then it will be so tough for somebody to really do the thinking for the farmers and say, hey, this is the way to go. Like I mentioned, it has to be like bottom up. The farmers themselves need to realize, okay, these are the challenges and this is how it should be solved. Then other actors can now think, okay, fine. These people or this group of people in the value chain have realized these are the issues and this is what they want. So there needs to be frequent communication or frequent meetings or frequent gatherings or connection that it's now able to put all the actors around. But then on the other side, I think there are a lot other actors can do, from government to private sector to companies that are into inputs, to companies that are into buying back, to processors and those that have add value to commodities in order to keep them or preserve them from going bad. So each of these has its specific and unique role that he or she needs to put on board in order to help these smallholder farmers, because they are right in the middle of the value chain, and then all pointers are directed to some of these farmers that we have. So one of the things I will say is, if you look at it from the input side, it is the responsibility of input companies to be able to present to farmers genuine produce or products, so to say. For example, if you're into agrochemical or if you're into seeds, you should be sure that you're not out there, because you have a lot of fake and adulterated chemicals or seeds in the market. So you see, there are opportunists that work in the value chain to like cheat the farmers or make money out of the farmers, so much more that in time past, a lot of farmers have lost confidence in input suppliers, even though some of the farmers are not really informed. That is why when I speak with information, information is almost everything. For a farmer to be able to identify this is a fake and adulterated chemical or a fake and adulterated seed, he needs maybe some pointers. He needs further education, because education goes with knowledge, right? They are able to identify and run away from some of these wolves in the market. So that is very key. And of course, research and development plays a very critical role because it's an investment from some of these companies. So if companies are able to dedicate more money into research and development to get to the root of it, where can we or how can we come up with high yielding varieties, or how can we make more researches to maybe new diseases we're seeing in the fields or pests that are coming into the field where the farmers are really helpless. So in as much as the farmers want to produce, they also have their challenges and they cannot solve some of these challenges. They have to like rely on maybe seed companies or rely on agrochemical companies. And if the research and development is not being pushed forward, then I think at the end of the day, the farmers will be fighting a lot in the market, investing a lot of money on inputs, but at the end of the day will not get results. So that's on the side of an input companies. Then also, we spoke about infrastructure, which was one of the first thing I highlighted as one of the challenges of the farmers. In as much as they produce, no matter how good or how well the yield is, there are basic infrastructure that, helps the farmers' livelihood. Good roads is one. We know how bad electricity is in Nigeria. You don't even go there. So most of these farmers rely on petrol to power their generators or pumping machine, as it were. Thank God for technologies that are coming up like the solar self-generating energy to pump water or to do a lot of facilities or get things done on the farm. But it doesn't also come cheap because this is a new technology and not all farmers can adopt or afford it because they are quite expensive. So you see some of these factors also slow down our farmers because the infrastructure is not there. This morning I was discussing, we have an onion project where we are doing in Sokoto, and we've already penned down the cost of production. And then only to wake up overnight, the cost of fuel has doubled. At the time we did this EOP, the cost of fuel was not that high. And then it means people or the farmers or the stakeholders have to return back to the drawing table to say, okay, how can we now make up for some of these things? Yes, sorry, you lost me. Sure. Are you there, Sharon?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Good. So I was actually talking about infrastructure, and even in this meeting, we just lost our connection. So that's even a very good example to know that we're working in a very difficult terrain, and we have to make hay while the sun shines because we don't have any option, right? So basically, I think for the smallholder farmers, these are some of the challenges. And we spoke about market access. Market access has to do with the farmers now getting markets for their produce. And sometimes the middlemen are part of the problem. These are actors that are supposed to make maybe life easy for some of these smallholder farmers, women, youths, and their likes. But they are now part of the problem because if you analyze most of the value chains we're talking about, the profit is stuck with the middlemen, is stuck with the guys that pick and sell. Meanwhile, a farmer will be on his field working for 3 months, 4 months, 5 months before he's able to get this produce. He's the one that invests. But somebody somewhere is seated, broad daylight, determining what the price will be. And then the farmers are at their mercies because they cannot jump over or skip these guys and get access to farmers. But I know there are a lot of programs that are being put around ensuring that the farmers are able to sell directly to end users or consumers. And that has really, really helped. But then it also needs a further organization because there are marketplaces now, even online, people are putting a lot of applications online to see how they link up consumers to the farmers to be able to sell immediately. Better information is also key. Policies, like I said, Nigeria is known to have a lot of good policies, but where the issues come up has to do with the implementation. I mentioned earlier, we've heard about the Green Revolution, we've heard about the Anchor borrowers program, which is fantastic, good initiative. But then come down to the level of the implementation, you get really disappointed because it's not just from the side of maybe the government or the people implementing. Even the farmers themselves don't help themselves. I give you a scenario where there are anchor borrowers project, people feel this is a national cake. So I pick the loan, I don't pay back and nothing happens. Or my neighbor has done the same last anchor borrowers and nothing happened. And he feels, oh, it's my entitlement. I can also assess some of this loan and what? Spend the money and then nobody cares. So you can now see not all farmers are genuinely interested to help themselves. Where there is a program, instead of leveraging on those programs to ensure that you make good margins, good profit, build up your business, they don't really see it like a business. They see it as a national cake that they should just, you know, grab, spend the money, and what? Nothing happens. So I think that's a bit of what I can share with you, Sharon.
Thank you very much for sharing that. I totally agree with what you've just mentioned. I think a year or two, I spoke with the Bank of Agriculture here in Bayelsa State, and he was complaining bitterly because many of the farmers, should I even call them farmers? Because many of them, they come and lie and say, oh, they have a poultry farm, they have this, and then being the Bank of Agriculture, you're trying to support them and give them loans. But then you check, nothing, there's absolutely nothing that they're doing. They can't even return the money. So sometimes they find it difficult to even give. And then when they don't give, a lot of people will say, oh, they are wicked. It was literally complaining to me bitterly. And I'm like, oh, I feel your pain right now. I really do feel your pain. So maybe should I even now say, maybe we should just even be giving grants and not even getting bothered? Because for me, I'm not really of the opinion of giving grants, because I like to see farmers from the business angle. But if they themselves cannot see themselves in that light or see agriculture as a business, then maybe we should just opt for the grant and just hold hands. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that? Because I don't think grant is a way of helping farmers.
Yeah, interesting topic. Right, interesting topic to discuss, to give grant or not to give grants. For me, it's very clear. Anybody that cannot manage credit cannot manage grant, right? Because credit, you feel indebted to, okay, you're going to pay this money over 1 year, 2 years, or what have you. Then grants, of course, even when you're giving grants, you're being monitored to make business out of it. Like the lessons learned from Israel, most of the Israelis that returned back to the country, most of them started on grant, meaning the government were ready to support, maybe external sources of funding as well. So in that particular model, these guys have been able to prove, okay, they can actually use the grant to grow, right? So for me, money is money, whether it's grant or is credit. If you cannot manage credit, you can't manage grant, as it were. So if these guys that take bank loan cannot manage that money, I don't really believe Sharon giving grants can actually put their heads above the water, right? That is how I see it from my own perspective. And anybody who is able to manage credit, who is responsible to say, I've collected X amount of naira from the bank, I want to start maybe a poultry with maybe 100 beds. And he has a clear roadmap or pathway to see he grows from 100 beds to 500 beds to 1,000 beds. It means he has a concrete and a proper plan. Well, not to make it sound as if it's all perfect, that when you start a business, you must succeed, right? But of course, the plan has to be there. But some of those guys that collect those credit from the onset, like you said, when the bank checks, when they do their due diligence, there's even nothing on ground. Simply because you heard X bank is giving money, you jump up with no plan to just say, hey, I need this money. And good enough, the banks do due diligence and give money to whom they feel they should give. But even at the end of the day, if you talk to maybe agric officers or bankers who are saddled with the responsibility to probably follow up on loans, you'll be so disappointed, and you see how the guys are what, sweating in their suits to really recover that money back to the bank, because people have misused it. People don't even plow it into business. They use it for their own thing. Maybe what? Family party or sponsoring their son to school because they are broke, you know? So grant in itself, anybody that can manage credit can manage grant. So it's like a sure way, maybe even to get the grant, there has to be like prerequisite, there has to be some kind of rules and regulations put in place to ensure that when these grants are used, it would not just end up in story, but then it will help up in viable business that will actually generate resources of funds to the person in question, and as well help in nation building.
Thank you very much for sharing your thoughts on this. This has really been an insightful episode, and I really hope that the right people get to listen to this and really try to see how to start implementing what we've discussed here today. I really want to appreciate you coming on the show today to share your experience and your knowledge with us. Thank you so much for joining the show today, Adiza. We really appreciate you.
Thank you so much, Sharon.
Thank you. So guys, we have come to the end of today's episode. I hope you learned from this. I hope you enjoy this episode. And please do share this episode. There are lots of farmers, youth, women who really should be listening to this. We need to put out more information. And that is the reason why you have the Let's Talk Agriculture podcast show for that. Thank you very much, guys. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel, our social media platforms. We're on LinkedIn, we're on Instagram, we're on Facebook, and do explore our website to see how we can help you grow your business. Thank you very much, guys. I hope to see you again next week. Do have a lovely time. Bye-bye.